Hey, podcast friends. If you love our podcast and want to help support us to continue making cool shit, consider joining our Patreon community. Get early access to each episode, a monthly hangout on Zoom, custom answers to your questions in exclusive Patreon videos, and much, much more. Head on over to patreon.com/conversationswithcreators to become a patron today. Your support means the world to us. Now on to the episode.
We're not teaching improvisation as a personal development tool. We're teaching it as in the theater department as a theater class. Right. But the ways you need to be confident in the face of uncertainty, willing to dive in before you have all the information, willing to play with something that when you're not sure how it's going to turn out, all of these things, willing to be vulnerable and take risks, understanding what it means to support somebody else when they do, like all of that stuff builds confidence and empowerment that you're going to be okay. Even if things don't go well, you're going to be okay.
True happiness can come after you know what true heartbreak and true sadness feels like. You're like, oh man, this is incredible. And also, like, those are also beautiful, like, you know, living in the moment at a funeral where you can just absolutely cry your eyes out.
Yeah. Did you watch The Good Place?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
So it's like, hell was a never-ending good place. Like nothing, there was no end.
This is the bad place. Like, oh shit, yeah.
The bad place is like nothing matters. Nothing matters. You can have anything you want whenever you want it. It's like truly mortality makes life beautiful.
So the big question is this: how are creators like us who aren't built for the 9-to-5, for the people who put their passion before them being comfortable? How do we turn that passion into a living that pays the bills and a life that we love? That is the question. This podcast will give you the answers. My name is Noah Mittman, and welcome to Conversations with Creators.
Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Creators. We're made it to 50 episodes. I can't believe it. Oh my God. That's awesome. I'm on the road to 100 and we're halfway there, which is pretty wild. My guest today is master improver and teacher and amazing person altogether, my cousin, Lisa Rowland. Thanks for being on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to have this conversation with you.
I know. It's like I wish I could talk to you more. This is a perfect opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So let everybody know kind of your background, how you got going in improv, where the spark started with that.
Yeah. The initial sort of creative spark was definitely for theater and performing. And that happened when I was like a little kid. And improvisation kept happening to me. That's what I'll say. It kept happening to me. Like, I did not seek it out, but I continually met people who were involved in improvisation who said, yeah, Lisa, you should do improvisation. So in high school, some friends of mine put together a team at my high school and suggested I be a part of it. And so I auditioned and started there. Graduated high school, sort of figured I'd never do it again. It was like not on my list of priorities. Went to Stanford, auditioned for a musical, and the people who were running the musical said, you know, there's an improv team and you should apply. And I was like, okay. So yeah. I did. And then that became the defining experience of my university, my like university time.
So I know you were also in Belasco Theater Company. Was that kind of your, was that high school or was that, yeah, that was
high school.
High school, was that, and that was your introduction?
Middle school, like middle school and high school. Yeah. And so it absolutely, you know, I realize now was just a huge part of my training and confidence, like belief that I could be on stage. But, and it, I think, contributed to my feeling like, yeah, this is what I want to do for my life. Like, I want to be an actor. I want to be on stage. I want to do live production. I don't want to be on film. I want to be on
context
stage.
We were both in, you were many years before me, but we were both in Belasco Theater Company in high school, and it shaped a lot of who we are. And a lot of people from Belasco have gone on to have very theatrical careers.
Absolutely. Like, professional careers in theater, 100%. And it was like a regional youth theater company that did surprisingly high quality production, I think, given that like they were dealing with kids as young as six.
You know? I know. And animals, like it was
wild. Totally.
But like shaped so much of everybody that was involved in it, even though
Eddie, the guy that was running it, was this diabetic alcoholic who was completely insane, but
foul-mouthed.
Fantastic. Oh God,
foul-mouthed diabetic alcoholic. I want to say the last person that you would expect, if you met him, you would be like, children.
Wait, exactly. So you have a career in kids?
I don't see this. Right? Like, I remember going to his house for rehearsals, and there were like Playboys.
Oh no.
And syringes from his insulin, and I was like, this.
I remember the insulin stuff. I don't think, because we were always in the room that was so okay. Oh, this is the one totally side story. I was in his living room when the first bombs dropped on Baghdad for the Iraq war.
Oh my god.
Yeah, we were in rehearsal and he's like, well, we're at war.
Oh my god. And you're like, yeah, okay.
All right.
And like, from the top. And you're like,
okay. Literally, it was like 5 minutes of like, oh shit. It's like, all right, let's go back to this scene.
Get back to it. Yeah.
Okay. So you got into it there. You studied more at Stanford.
Yeah. Did improv at Stanford. And then when I left Stanford, was once again just going to, I was like, I'm going to go pursue theater, and if improv comes along, fine, but it's not a destination for me. And was going to move to Chicago because there's a lot of awesome regional theater, sort of multi-tier regional theater in Chicago.
You see it in Chicago, is famous.
Yeah. And my mom said, you know, I totally support you, and you're going into a career defined by rejection. Like, you are going to audition your butt off and you're going to get rejected mostly. You're brand new to this, like, you're brand new to the scene and you don't know a soul in Chicago. Yeah, yeah. So maybe do that here where you have a support network and live with friends and get into shows and figure yourself out. And then take it to a city you're excited about. Like, but get some stuff under your belt.
Start there, yeah.
I was like, fair, such good advice. So I stayed in the city, was looking for a job that was flexible and part-time so I could audition a lot.
Yep.
And somebody said, you know, Bats Improv is looking for a registrar to support the School of Improv.
Oh, wow.
I was like, perfect. And so, and I knew about Bats because Bats and Stanford Improv have a pretty, Bats is a very long-running professional improvisation theater company in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And
Bats Improv, which was connected to, yeah, go for it. Which was connected to Stanford, ish. It sounds like affiliated with.
Yeah. Like, the Stanford kids would always come up and see Bats shows, and Bats coaches would come down and coach, you know, like do guest workshops and stuff like that. So we had a relationship. It was not part of the same organization. And so I want to say that was the beginning of my career in improv, in that I started working at Bats. I was surrounded by professional improvisers. I sort of got in the door that way. People started being like, I started dropping into classes because I worked in the school. So I knew which classes were full and which ones weren't. And
nice.
I started training more and with more people. And then the artistic director.
Always how it time. Is.
Yeah. And then, from there, like, opportunities just started opening up. So the artistic director at the time said, you know, why don't you audition for the guest program? And I was like, okay. So once again, it was a suggestion from somebody else that, like, made me go for it.
That was the same for me when I went professional with video. Was a buddy was like, we were making this, you know, kind of random movement project. And he was like, you know, you're good enough to do this professionally, right? I was like, oh, shit.
Oh.
Okay. That's interesting.
Cool. Yeah, right. That's a thought. And so that was that. And then from there, things just kept opening up. I got invited to teach more and do some applied improv stuff, like improv with professional teams that are not looking to perform but just want to get better at, like, collaboration, right? And then 10 years ago, I got invited to come back and teach at Stanford, which is the class that I took when I was there.
That's so cool.
I'm one of the teachers of it. And that's been like a real gift and sort of a profound privilege to be a part of passing this on to the same lineage with from which I received.
Yeah, of course. It's like full circle.
Yeah. Feels so good.
To take it even further, then, what kind of has inspired you to combine those skills with storytelling, mindfulness, and emotional intelligence practices?
Oh, it just feels so obvious that that's what we're doing. Like, that's what these skills are. My buddy Ted DeMaison, who is also a Stanford improviser, but let's see, 10 years before I was. So there's sort of 15 years between us. We met at a Stanford Improv reunion and realized that both of us were just like jazzed about the values inherent in an improvisational approach.
Yeah.
For your listeners who are unfamiliar with improv.
That was gonna be my next question.
Yeah. The idea is sort of we are involved in the process of creative collaboration, which means that we need to sort of approach one another with attention and appreciation and curiosity and playfulness and generosity, mm-hmm. an awareness of the whole, an awareness that we are part of an ensemble, that we are here to lift each other up instead of showcase our own selves, that we're here to do what's needed instead of show off. Like all of these really incredible, really inspiring
skills to be a good human too.
Skills to be a good human. Exactly. So we realized that we both were turned on by the ways that these values came through a theatrical training in improvisation. And we started the podcast Monster Baby, which is all about the intersection of mindfulness and improvisation.
Nice.
And every episode is a different topic, like a different, like positivity, eye contact, conflict, mm-hmm. silence, you know, like what, so many different.
That's epic. That's still going, is it?
Still going. Yeah. Recording the next one next week. It slowed down when I had a kid, as you can imagine, right? It's like.
I have a small idea about that.
Yeah. You have an idea of how things change. And I've only got one. We started doing that. We led a couple of retreats about improvisation for a meaningful life, basically, sort of like how we embody these exercises and then apply them to our lives and let them guide our ways that we approach decisions and people and new situations.
I mean, just having the yes and, you know, which is the classic improv kind of mentality in life is a huge, huge thing. Like you not just shutting off anything right off the bat, like exploring yes before no.
It's huge. It's revolutionary.
Yeah. it is big enough to be a thing.
So different than how so many people are, I want to say are wired. I don't mean that it's how they're wired. I mean, it's what they've practiced.
Right.
It's so different than the defaults of.
Right.
That we so easily can develop. And I say that really intentionally because being a no-sayer and being a yes-sayer is not necessarily disposition. I mean, it's like disposition informed, but it's also just habit. It's like, well, what are you? You get good at what you practice. And so
if you
practice saying yes to things and looking for the possibilities in them, then you'll get better at doing that. And that will come more naturally. I mean, that will be the second
nature. Get good at what you practice literally is for everything that you're trying to do in life. That's 100%. That's the mentality of what, you know, it's what you practice. Absolutely.
Yeah. What are you giving yourself reps at? Like, what are you doing the reps for? That's going to be what comes most naturally to you eventually.
Yeah.
That will be your habit. So,
how have you seen that then become, because obviously you're teaching about it, and tactically, how have you seen that as a tool for personal growth and development for people?
You know, people talk a lot about that idea of yes and, of accepting rather than blocking.
Yeah.
Being a life changer in personal relationships. And they'll say, I didn't realize how often I was forcing my viewpoint, waiting, like listening, just waiting for my turn to speak, sort of.
Most conversations that are not aware of it, honestly.
Totally. And they say, you know, I started practicing just looking for opportunities to say yes instead, and it changed so much about my life. And I think that also in close personal relationships, like romantic partnerships, primary relationships, we can really get into habits. And when we shift those, it's like opens up a whole new dimension of what that relationship can be, you know? And so that's really cool. And people talk about, I think one of the things that improvisation also does, it's so cool because you teach improv not as therapy, but it has all these therapeutic sort of results or
like what
implicate these, like, you know, these personal development implications. We're not teaching improvisation as a personal development tool. We're teaching it as in the theater department as a theater class. Right. But the ways you need to be confident in the face of uncertainty, willing to dive in before you have all the information, willing to play with something that when you're not sure how it's going to turn out, all of these things, willing to be vulnerable and take risks, understanding what it means to support somebody else when they do, like all of that stuff builds confidence and empowerment that you're going to be okay. Even if things don't go well, you're going to be okay. And I think so many of our decisions are driven by anxiety or fear of, like, what if it doesn't work out?
Yeah.
Even in tiny, teeny, tiny little ways, right? It's like somebody new that you know only a little bit invites you somewhere and you're like a little bit of afraid that it's going to be kind of awkward. So you say no. And it's like, so what if it's awkward? Like, can you survive awkwardness? You can survive awkwardness and it might turn out great, you know, but we sort of keep ourselves safe when we say no to stuff. So
that's a big thing that we also teach the kids and, you know, everybody that I try to come in contact with is the power of asking. Just ask. Like, if you want something, if you're going after something, if you're trying to find more information, if you're trying to learn about something, just ask. Because the worst literally the worst you can get is a no. And then you're like, okay, cool, next thing.
And then you're exactly where you already are. Like, yeah, exactly. They're still worse off than where you are now. Anything. And you still don't have that information, you know?
And you may even gain something if it's either a yes or if it's a complete shutdown. You're like, okay, cool, don't trust that person. Got it.
Right. Yeah, you get information either way.
Which, I know, I love that.
Yeah, totally.
So what would you how do you see storytelling as a tool for life as well?
I mean, storytelling is like a building block of life. Mm-hmm. I don't even see it as a tool. Yeah, see it as like, it's in our DNA.
Oh, no, 100%.
It is. It's how we show up, is like our brains are wired for it. We learn better in story.
Mm-hmm.
Stories we tell ourselves, all of our memories are just stories. They change as we tell them and remember them again. Like, yeah, I think it was our first tool for learning, for like understanding somebody else's experience as they would tell a story of where they had been. And then we were like, ah, now I understand more about the world than I personally have experienced. Like, so it's everywhere. And I think in terms of how it's powerful personally, it feels like there are multiple ways to tell a story, to tell any story. And one of the things that I teach is storytelling and the idea that you can tell a story in an effort to have a particular impact. And there are certain ways you can tell a story in order to do that. And I think one of the ways that it's most... So a couple ways. Number one, storytelling is a great communication tool. So getting better at telling stories. If you want to have an impact on people around you, tell them stories.
Yeah.
Like, stories will go
far. That's literally how morals are built, is the moral of a story. It's the story that teaches you the saying.
Right. Stories teach us things. Stories motivate us. They move us to action. They do so many. They open our hearts to people. They make us, they build empathy. Like, there's a million things. And so if you're looking to have an impact, see if you can tell a story to have that impact. There's an amazing woman named Jennifer Ocker who does some work on storytelling and she talks about how if you wrap data in a story, we're like 70% more likely to remember that data.
Oh, yeah.
You just tell us the data, you know?
For me, where I've had most experience with it too is in sales tactics, in trying to make a point about, whatever it is that you're trying to sell. Like, it's stories are the way that it is, again, information is best communicated.
Yeah.
It's just, instead of just saying, I think instead of just saying the point you're trying to make, having a story that proves the point you're trying to make is, again, probably 100 times more powerful.
Totally. Totally. It scratches an itch somewhere deep in our, deep, deep brain. It's like human beings are like, we just are built to hear stories and to process stories.
That's what theater and film is. That's what, it's all, mm-hmm. all of them, how many of us have had a major life decision or had a light bulb moment off of a piece of art that we're watching because the story is delivering that message.
I remember I took some time off of Stanford, actually, right before I had to declare a major, which at the time seemed very high stakes.
Yeah.
I feel like I understand a little bit more now about how the world works. And so I'm like, oh, girl, it doesn't matter. But at the time, it seemed very high stakes. And I was sort of in my head about, I am at Stanford. All I want to do is theater, but people don't come to Stanford for a theater education. should I do something, quote unquote, serious? Because of messaging, right? Just because of the world and people thinking arts aren't important. This is why. But
it's actually great. Finish it, and then it's the perfect for arts aren't important. And then I have a story about that because with your experience.
Great. So I took some time off. I actually lived abroad. I went to Barcelona because of a series of decisions. I wanted to sort of work on language. I stopped out of school. It was not a study abroad program. It was just go live there. I worked. Yeah. I nannied and waited tables and stuff. And at the end, I took a little weekend trip. I want to say to Paris. I think I went to Paris. A friend of mine who was also in Europe, we met up and we took a train to Paris. And I saw a ballet. And it was so beautiful. I am not a ballet dancer. Okay, to be clear. This is not my art form. But I was weeping. I was weeping in the audience, and I had taken a year off. The reason I took a year off was because I was I need to step back and figure out when I am not on this treadmill of education, when I'm not you do this and then you declare a major and then you graduate and then you go into that field and then you go, it's hold on. Not in that context, what do I want?
Right.
And what makes me feel alive? And how do I want to construct my life? And I sort of think I need to get out of Stanford in order to know what that is. Mm-hmm. I need to get out of this context. And so I left for the year. And at the end of that year, I was sitting in that theater, and I was moved so deeply by the beauty of these people who had worked for thousands of hours on being able to do what they could do at such a high level of quality. And the story, whatever, it's a ballet story. It's some young woman fell in love with somebody and then her father didn't let her marry him. And who cares about the story? But the
ballet story.
The way that I felt in watching it was so deeply moved that this was an aha moment where I was I need to make theater. People come to a theater and they touch their humanity. Their humanity is touched in theaters. And this is where I want to be. It was a real moment of clarity for me, even though it was I'm not a ballet dancer.
Oh, no, but it was communication. It was art communicating to you, which is what art does.
Ooh, it was beautiful.
That's awesome. Okay, so this just reminded me of the craziest shit. You had the GOAT of commencement speakers at your... your graduation, freaking
Steve Jobs,
with the famous speech that he gave was at your graduation.
Stay hungry, stay foolish.
Oh my God. One of the greatest speeches of all time, famously.
Totally.
And the whole, like, you know, art being important, like, that must have, how was that with where you were in that time graduating? Like, how did that affect you? What, how did that kind of hit you at that time?
Here is the part that I actually remember most of that speech, listening to it, was not the stay hungry, stay foolish part, although that is beautiful and advice absolutely to live by. He talked about how going through school, he sort of followed his little whims and fancies. You like took a calligraphy class.
Yeah,
right?
And that's why they're smart. I was in, by the way, so you were down in the audience. I was up with my mom in the stands watching. I had no idea who Steve Jobs was at that time.
Yeah.
And now, like, I wish I'd been more like, I still remember it, but I wish I'd been more like, holy shit, this is Steve Jobs.
Right. Right.
But no,
I don't think
class.
I was like, yeah. Steve, cool. Yeah, big deal, Steve Jobs. You know, it was like, now, I mean, yeah.
Thanks, man.
Right there. Right.
With those, and the computer that this is being broadcasted on.
Yeah. I mean,
unthinkable
visionary.
Oh, it's insane. But yeah, because like he liked fonts, and now we have a whole bunch. Like, following the little ideas that come up was.
Yeah. Cute. And the thing that the analogy he used was, it was like a connect the dots, but you never know what the picture is until you've put all the dots out. So yeah. It's like, you didn't know that the calligraphy, he probably did a bunch of other stuff that amounted to nothing. Right. You know?
It's like, this one worked.
But this one was a dot. Ultimately, at the end, he can look back and be like, oh.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't go to that ballet in Paris because I was like, I'm looking for inspiration. I was like, oh, you're in Paris. I guess you got to go see a ballet, you know? Like,
yeah, of course.
So then you look back and you're like.
But that's the whole saying yes. That's the whole being interested in not being like shooting down your, you know, the whims, like the random things that you have ideas for.
Totally. And then you look back and it like freed me because I was like, you know, you don't know. He didn't put the iPhone on his 5-year plan. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think I felt
it wasn't even an idea at that point, I bet. Because we still had the iPod to come.
Right. I'm like, I don't know. What was the timeline? I forget.
Remember. But still, it was early enough to where he wasn't like the icon that he is now.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. He had made huge splashes and he had way more splashes.
Way more. Yeah.
And so that idea of like, yeah, follow it. You don't need to know why.
Yeah,
follow it. You don't need to know why. Like, you never know. One of these things could lead to something and maybe not, but like, go follow it. Go do it because you're interested. And I think this is one of the things that I'm like really entranced by or like delighted by in terms of having a creative life is sort of that it stokes my inspiration. My inspiration is stoked all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's really easy if you don't have a context where your inspiration is called upon, then it can go a little dormant, you know?
Yeah.
In the name of other very important things, duty, responsibility, success, like lots of things that are also very important. And it feels fun to be in touch with inspiration.
I'm addicted to it.
Yeah.
I'm addicted. And it's part of why, you know, and I've talked about it on probably almost every episode of this, is like why I do this is like it's a fun side thing that, you know, may amount to money down the road. Well, a previous podcast guest, actually, now I have one of my biggest projects with.
Nice.
For the company. So like it has led to money, but like I'm more in it to just like, I'm so much in the, you know, the basement black hole of editing of like, you know, just doing my thing that like connecting with other people to make an effort for it. And this is the easy way to make an effort, you know, to again, get that inspiration, to get that energy back. And I love it with that.
Yeah. Yeah. To like be reminded. It's like, oh yeah. Because creation is magical.
Yeah.
And creativity is divine. I mean, it feels divine. It's like, oh my God, you get to put something into the world. And like art feels at its core hopeful, like, like hopeful and optimistic. It's like we should pause to make beautiful things. Like that.
Well, it's like every
every major, you know, again, the Stay Hungry, Stay Foolish, like every major piece of inspiration that most people get is from something that was made. Or it I mean, that's, you know, even a conversation is made. It's your brain creating stuff.
Yeah.
Everything, I should say, in a positive way. Like, that's definitely, it keeps you in positivity, keeps you in, you know, what possibilities are out there, which comes back to improv. And, it, you know, again, yeah, part of why I don't, you know, here's the list of questions you're going to have for this. Like, no, it's just, we're just going to have a talk, and eventually I'm going to check my notes and go to the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good. It puts you in that brain, in that headspace of where you need to be for inspiration to strike and for us to, you know, stay excited.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Okay. I want to know, because I know you've been through the ups and downs with improv shows. What are some of the, maybe one or two of the craziest or most challenging, memorable performances with improv that you've had? Because I've seen you do an entire improvised Shakespeare play, which is insanity.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite things to do. I mean, like, that is like my happy place.
It's
like,
so wild.
Give me a title. Let me make up a play. I would love it. But the most challenging stuff is really when you're having to perform for people who don't necessarily want to watch an improv show. And then you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Is that the point you just kind of do it for you?
Yeah. If you can, like, if you can make that shift in your mind, you know, and then you're like, okay. I'm just going to show myself a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's like, that's actually a hard.
So 100%. What are some of your favorites then? What is like your happy place with all the different types of performances that you've done?
Yeah. Improvising musicals.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Improvising Shakespeare. I could do it for a million years. Improvising.
A specific skill.
I know, it's such a weird, like, who knows? There are like many people in the world who want to do that, you know, and I know half of them. I really love when improvisation transcends comedy and becomes theater. Like, I'm a storyteller, not a joke maker. Like, I don't consider myself a comedian, and I think this is one of the things where a lot of people think improv and they hear comedy.
Yeah, right. Because that's improv, I mean, that's what you, I think that's what's most mainstream with improv is the, you know, comedian or like, you know, the SNL, leading up to SNL or whatever.
SNL, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Is a comedy show. Like, it's edited for comedy, you know?
Yeah.
And
improv drama or improv sadness is what a crazy interesting headspace to get into of like, I'm gonna start crying in an improv show with like, that's, man.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because in a way it feels harder to think that you could get that there in a scripted show where you know it's coming and you're not surprised by the situation. And so it's like none of those, you really have to manufacture. I mean, it's just a different skill set, you know? Yeah. So I think the shift that has to come is that improvisers need to see themselves as actors and not comedians. And if you're playing for comedy, you're never going to get to this moment where you might touch a different part of humanity.
Right.
But if you see yourself as an actor and a storyteller, then you want to be able to activate all of the breadth of human experience that stories do, which is all of it. You know, like, stories are powerful for how they are profound and poignant and heartbreaking and hilarious and absurd. And like, we want to do it all ultimately.
That was a big point, actually, in a recent, I do these kind of summaries on podcasts and shows that are like, you know, 90 minutes long. I'm like, here's it in 5 minutes, key points. And Jordan Peterson was talking about how he'd much rather feel the entire breadth of human experience and emotions than just to be happy all the time, because it's way, like, you want to, you know, I think true happiness can come after you know what true heartbreak and true sadness feels like. You're like, oh man, this is incredible. And also, like, those are also beautiful, like, you know, living in the moment at a funeral where you can just absolutely cry your eyes out.
Yeah. Did you watch The Good Place?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's like hell was a never-ending good place. Like, nothing, there was no end.
This is the bad place. I'm like, oh, shit, yeah.
The bad place is, like, nothing matters. Nothing matters. You can have anything you want whenever you want it. It's like, truly, mortality makes life beautiful. But yeah. You can only have it if you recognize that it's not that all the time.
Good place is so good. Check it out, people.
It's really so fun. It's like,
oh, okay.
And it's pretty profound, you know.
Very, like, very. Better, like, actually.
Pretty profound. Yeah. So that idea, I had a moment recently, actually, in a show that brought actual tears to my eyes, and it, like, took me a minute to shake it.
Wow.
Backstage, I, like, left the stage, and I was like, whoo, okay. But just, like, you got to get back on board because something new is happening on stage right now. It's like you might need to go back on as somebody else in a different context. And it's fun to find people, you know, there are definitely improvisers who want to do it for the comedy.
Yeah.
So it's, you got to find your people who want to make the kind of art you want to make, you know,
as in any community.
Yeah. I'm sure you've run into the same thing, right? Where it's like, you got to find the collaborators who are like, you get me, you get what I'm doing here.
Well, I mean, style wise, client wise, even on, you know, bigger, I'm just about to release an episode with a director of photography. And we had a whole conversation with, like, there's the lighting side of film, there's the camera side of film, there's the directing side of film, which is, like, making all those decisions, there's the production assist. Like, there's so many things you can go into, and they don't all necessarily lead to each other. You kind of have to choose your thing and then somehow get hired in that thing. Even, it's just this wild world.
Yeah, it's not like, I work in film, and then you can, like, do any of the things. It's like...
It's actually hilarious that you know, especially for, like, when you're starting out with, like, production assistant stuff, which I've done my fair share amount. It's like, oh, cool, you're, you know, working in film. I'm working on a Disney thing. I'm like, yeah, I'm running waters around to people and collecting trash and doing airport runs. And that's
working in film. Yeah.
That's 100%. I've worked for Disney.
Yeah, right. Now you've got Disney on your resume. But it's the same thing. It's like being a working actor is like usually being a SAT tutor or being a waiter or being a receptionist or being a, like, you name it. It's like that's what being an actor is like auditioning and having a job that pays your bills. Like, and you, and that's so not being an actor.
That. You know, well, like, yeah, sure. Exactly. And then even, you know, when you get to, like, that's, I don't think people understand, like, the 0.1%, 0.01% that really, really make it. There, I mean, that was a big thing that the strike was about, was like, listen, most of creators are having issues with bills.
Yeah.
Yeah. The A-listers are
even successful ones, you know, like, you remember Tracy McDowell. Like, I remember she was on Broadway. Yeah. Right, you remember Tracy? She was on Broadway in Rent from Belasco. Incredible talent. And then, like, but, like, in between things, you need something else. Remember?
Yeah.
Like, I remember her, I don't know, she had, like, yeah, it was like a tutoring job or a something job, teaching job. And it's like, that's just what the job is, actually.
Why did you talk to Casey Rogers about it, who was on Broadway with, or I think off Broadway with 50 Shades of Grey. And she, again, it was, you know, this crazy touring schedule, and it didn't pay that, you know, it was just like you were there for the experience, and then you get home and you're still broke.
And you're like, you got a thing on your resume. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, so you sort of have to, I think that you have to sign up, and this is like, this is actually kind of a lovely thing about improv also. You have to sign up because you love doing it.
Right.
And you sign up for the pursuit.
You sign up to do it.
To move toward it. And, like,
right.
You know, the other thing about improv is, like, yeah, there are times when I have played an improv show for two individuals. Oh, the moms of people in the cast, you know? And it's like, good thing I love doing this, you know?
Exactly. I remember... And it's actually something that I pride myself on a little bit of, which is funny. So for, like, event coverage for video, I heard a great quote from a podcast that was like, the closer the shot, the shittier the party, the wider the shot, the better the party. So like, cause I've definitely done like, you know, little like promoting a DJ or promoting a club or something where I have to like shoot the two people in the front row that are the only people there, but I still have to make it look like the best time in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm good at it.
This is storytelling. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. Oh,
you could tell that story multiple ways for different impacts.
Exactly.
There it is.
As long as there's a couple shots of other stuff in between those two people, you can come back to them.
Yeah. That'd make it look like the crowd.
Yeah. But I was like, hey, that's a skill you need to get. And then, you know, when it's packed. Actually, I prefer less people because it's harder to move around when there's a packed room.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, give me a good 10-person crowd. I'm going to make it look magnificent.
Oh, yeah. 100%. You won't even be able to. It's moving by silhouettes of heads and just doing it quick. And it's crazy.
Yeah. That's great.
So what have been actually on the kind of the making the living thing, what have been over time your biggest like money makers that have allowed you to do, you know, full time stuff?
Teaching. I teach down at Stanford. I teach storytelling also down at Stanford. So I have sort of like a couple of things there. And then I'm a trainer for communication skills, a job that I got because I'm an improv, because of my improv.
Yeah.
But it is not improv. It is teaching, projecting confidence and credibility. It's like communication skills and how your behaviors undermine you or help you.
Right.
Super valuable information.
Improv has been the building blocks, as you said, for life that you can now take to teaching students, teaching corporate, teaching, you know, the skills that honestly people really, really need.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's getting to be more and more understood, like as I think corporations are understanding that humans matter.
Crazy idea.
Which is a slow process.
Did you see Bo Burnham's The Inside movie? What
the hell is it called? Yes.
Oh my God. When he's just like, what if we just a thought think that Neutrogena is not racist?
That was a masterpiece. That
I know his mental health suffered, but good God, that was good art.
What a thing to do.
Oh my God.
Struggle. Like, oh, I.
He was one of the few people that was actually productive during.
Like, COVID. Incredibly productive. Like, so I was just like, this is remarkable.
Yeah.
What an artifact of a time. Like, what a gift for future generations to look at this thing and be like, when you say lockdown, we mean lockdown. Yeah, right.
He's just like, well, I'm 30. It's like, oh, Jesus. I appreciate him going to those depths for, if I ever get a chance to talk to him, I was like, thank you for going there.
Thank you.
For the rest of us.
Yes. Thank you for this gift. It was not in vain. Your struggle was not in vain.
But yes, but the teaching corporate, because seriously, I mean, that was one of the things that I remember most from another commencement speech, actually from Jim Carrey, saying that, you know, his dad could have been a great comedian, but he chose a stable job and then he got fired just like out of the blue. So like teaching corporations to care about people that, you know, that there are, you know, having those concepts and having those ways of thinking is important. And for you to be able to like bring your spirit to that is huge.
You know, yeah, it's, to be real, capitalism is still bad for people. Yeah. Like, we know that. Capitalism is still
that's I think that's like the baseline of like, we understand.
Not human forward. And so it's like, I don't think I'm changing that. And I don't think I'm changing the fact that the bottom line means more than any of these human beings to most corporations. Yeah. But it's certainly where I'm like, well, I need that money more than you do.
It was like, listen, if we can take some of this market share from the big guys and give it to me, I will.
Yeah, a smaller guy. I got one in mind. Yeah, exactly. So it's just it's where the cash is, and it's something that is that I like. I mean, my favorite thing, the thing that I would do. I feel like the way I put it: performing is my pilot light. It's the thing that I need to be doing that keeps anything else going. Like, I think it would be weird for me to keep teaching if I was not performing.
Right.
So I keep performing. I make crumbs performing, but I perform. It's like a priority for me. Yeah, I get paid in other ways. Like
it is not for who you are, and you. Need to, I mean, again, I just you go back. I don't remember what episode it is. Hold up, real fast. I'm gonna do it. If you go back to episode 45, Corinne Hancock, so she's a public speaker who speaks about chaos. She is going to go join the Peace Corps in Africa for 2 or 3 years because she's like, I need to be the person that lives it and not just speaks about it.
Good for her.
So for you, you're the performer, and then the other stuff aids that.
Yeah. Or is like an out, it's like an offshoot of that. It's just what I'm here for. It's just what I'm here for. So it's like,
purpose.
Yeah. It's what most fills me up, I think. But the job outside of performing that I would do if I never had to work again a day in my life is I would teach beginning improv 100%.
Nice. I would
coach advanced improvisers. Like,
so you, I mean, so that's like, what's cool is like you are the performer, but you truly, truly enjoy teaching.
I love teaching. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Because I love showing people to this way of being.
Mm-hmm.
Especially
like, I found my happy and I can teach you to find your happy.
Yeah, or just like give you a set of skills that might show you that, especially at a high pressure institution like Stanford, it's like taken a lot of perfectionism for you to get here. And I'm here to tell you it's okay. Like you can relax.
How many people break down in tears?
Oh my God. Well, one person said to me, I think this is actually the praise I will remember for the rest of my life. He said, I was so nervous about taking your class, but I signed up for it. He was a guy for whom faith was really an important part of his life. And he said,
yeah.
I decided that if God wanted me to be in this class, I would get off the wait list. And so I got off the wait list. And I used to think that being the smartest person in the room, like the smarter I was, the more I knew and the happier I'd be. Yeah. And now I understand there are other ways to be happy and that happiness means something else. And so tonight, instead of studying for finals, I'm going to a party. I was like, I've done it.
But your parents will be furious, but you're going to be awesome.
You'll be happy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know that there's another way.
Oh,
happiness. Like that's, yeah.
I will give you a couple of quick fire questions here to end up.
Okay.
And then we got a hard time out. So this will be fun because I think we may have covered it already, but what is one of your favorite quotes and why?
There are people in the world who prefer to say yes and those who prefer to say no. Those who say yes are rewarded by the adventures they have. Those who say no are rewarded by the safety they attain. Keith Johnstone in a book called Impro. Brilliant.
Solid quote.
And has changed my life.
Yeah, that's that. Man, if that's like, well, clip that.
Yeah. That's the one.
Real hard one. Although maybe not for you because your mind's quick. I've had people just kind of stare blankly. You may have thought of this already. What is the title of your memoir?
Late Bloomer in Bloom.
Nice.
Yeah.
Late Bloomer in Bloom?
Late Bloomer in Bloom. I feel like it took me a long time to find myself. I'm getting married in my 40s.
Yeah.
I like, you know.
Congrats,
it's like,
by the way.
Yeah, thank you. everything happened kind of late, and it's great. It's like it all happened the way it needed to. Bloomer in Bloom. That's the title of my memoir.
Love it. What is a hobby that kind of helps you relax and takes you away from it all?
Puzzles.
That's the second time I've heard puzzles.
I love puzzles. I am highly meditative for me.
Oh, yeah.
I could do it for hours.
For me, weirdly, not like a classic hobby thing, but like whenever my mom needs me to put together furniture, I could do that for hours. I mean, my hands hurt a little bit, but like because I'm so high level creative all the time, and I think similar with puzzles, like you have one task to do, it's simple, put on music and like relax.
Just do it. Just work on it bit by bit, put pieces together. It's incredibly satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. And then finally, I'll kind of roll out the red carpet for you, let people know where to find you and what you got going on in your life.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I play at Bats Improv in San Francisco. That's improv.org. I am at lisaroland.com, so you can find my website there. And if I keep it updated ever, then you'll see what I'm doing. And I also play with a group called Improv Playhouse of San Francisco, and we're a little bit more nomadic, so you're more likely to catch us sort of like abroad and wandering around the world and potentially the country But those are the places you can find me. And I'm
Do you have other than the website, do you have anywhere where you kind of keep stuff? Do you have social media that you keep up to date a little bit, or is it kind of just find?
I'm also having it because I cannot. It is a place that I do not want to give as much time as it demands.
I hear that.
Maybe to my detriment. I was like, I can't do Instagram.
No.
I can't do it because it's stealing my focus from my kid. I'm like, I can't. You know.
I get that.
Yeah.
That's a good decision. No.
Here's one more thing I want to leave you with.
Please.
An amazing book, in addition to Keith Johnstone's Impro, is Improv Wisdom by Patricia Ryan Madsen. It is a short, incredibly readable book. You should read it.
Okay.
My cousin. It is all about applying the 13 maxims of improvisation to your life with little experiments. She goes, try this, and gives you a suggestion of something to try. Improv Wisdom. It is my most gifted item. I give it to everybody I meet.
That's a great recommendation. I will check that out. And I will, by the way, link everything in the show notes so that the audience can check it out.
Cool.
Shit, little hands tapping on me. All right. Yeah. I think you need to go. I need to go get these. Get
our children
out. Yeah.
Our children call. Yes. Great to talk with you, Noah.
This was so much fun. Thank you for being on. And I was, as soon as you signed up, I was like, yes, we finally get to talk.
We did it.
All right. Well, you have a fantastic rest of your day. Hold on, buddy. I gotta hit the
end. Yeah, thank you. Send me a link when it's up.
I will send all this stuff in one. It's gonna be so the full episode will be up in a couple of weeks. The clips will take a little bit longer because I have an editor working on them, but I also clip everything out, so I'll tag you and all that stuff. Maybe I'll text it to you because you're not on social.
I'm on Facebook. You could tag me on Facebook.
Okay, perfect.
And I'm on LinkedIn.
I'm very active on LinkedIn as of this year. I'm trying to
post nominally. I'm trying to get more active as well. Yeah. So you could tag me there. That'd be great. I'll share.
Good
it
place. Share if it you want to make some more money, it's a good place to be like a quote unquote influencer.
A content.
It's Facebook, but for people with money.
Creating content, totally. People who can hire you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for your time, and for everybody watching and listening, I will see you next time.
Bye.